We have before us five bills today. Public hearing and possible work session. We're going to take them in order, which will leave us, I hope, ample time to hear the discussion and debate on House Bill 2744 at the end. With that, I'm going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 897. Jan, would you introduce us to 897?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 897 directs the Oregon Department of Education to study school district expenditures on English as a second language programs. And it directs the ODE to report its findings to the State Board of Education and to the legislative interim committees related to education. Declares an emergency effective upon passage.
All right. That's a pretty simple little bill, isn't it? We have four witnesses signed up. We're going to have Eduardo. I'm going to have trouble pronouncing. We got Anna Livia.
Yes.
And Samuel. Please come up and take chair. You've signed up as being in four.
Yes.
Senate Bill 897. Please give us your testimony. Your name first and.
Good afternoon, Chairman Starr, members of the committee. My name for the record is Eduardo Angulo. I am the chairman of the Salem Kaiser Coalition for Equality. We are a group of 14 community organizations that work on helping our school district here in Salem Kaiser deal with the lack of cultural understanding and sometimes trying to be a help in how do we deal with the changing in the demographics. I am here to testify in favor of Senate Bill 897, and my testimony reads that during the 2001 Oregon Legislative Assembly, a relatively new issue for Oregon surprised many legislators, the dismal educational failure of Oregon minority children. The legislature addressed one facet of this failure, the lack of educational and fiscal accountability in the area of English language learners, or ESL students, through an accountability budget note attached to the 2001-2003 education budget. The ESL student population is growing on an average of 10% per year, 95% of them of which are Latinos. But educational programs and support services are, if anything, declining. These children's educational success is very low, which is filling our communities at the same increasing rate with adults unprepared and unable to contribute, and greatly increasing the overrepresentation of minorities in our prisons. Morally, we should care deeply about every child's right to an equal opportunity future. But we should be just as concerned about the economic and livable future of Oregon. More adults working at unskilled part-time jobs or worse in prison will not improve our critically damaged Oregon economy in the next 10 years. We have an emergency crisis, both economically and educationally. This year, over 55,000 ESL children will attend school districts across Oregon, bringing well over $150 million extra, or $2,500 per child, with them. How will this money get spent? Will it be used to support the success of the children for which it was intended? It has been estimated that in the past 11 years, only 20 to 40% of these funds have been used for the benefit and success of these ESL children. Fortunately, the initial solution has been created. Now, it simply needs implementation. In the 2001 Oregon legislative session, both Republican and Democratic legislators unanimously approved the accountability budget note to the Joint Subcommittee of Capital Construction, Lottery, and Bonding, which is in charge of the state education budget. Last September 2002, the reports of how this money has been spent were due from each district across Oregon. Unfortunately, most did not comply with the legislators' request. Now, Senator President Peter Cornyn and Senators Kay Brown and Charlie Ringo are introducing Senate Bill 897 to ask the Department of Education to conduct a study on the expenditure of monies by school districts in Oregon on English as second language programs. As a coalition of ESL equal education advocates, we welcome the Senator's support of our ESL students' education and appreciate all efforts taken by your committee to make sure that the Department of Education can conduct an effective study of the use of these earmarked ESL funds. Sincerely, Eduardo Angulo. Thank you.
Any questions?
Well, if I may, very briefly, do you have any anecdotal information about how this money is not being spent? I mean, are there any, for instance, so-and-so
yes.
School district is doing...
Senator Morris said, yes, I do. We have been working here in the Salem-Keizer School District, or attempting to work with the Salem-Keizer School District. I give you an example. We have, for the year 2002-2003, we have and an average between 4,500 and 4,700 students, ESL students. This school year, they brought in well over $12 million for their education. These children, 90% of them are at the 30th percentile in reading, writing, and doing math. Which means that if you have a 70 percentile is a C, 30th percentile is no way out. It's they're 3-4 years behind in education. Of those $12 million, the school district has only allocated, and that is after our advocacy, half of that money, $5.5 million. So that is an example. I mean, there have been investigative reporting from the Statesman Journal that I can provide to the committee done in the past. Actually, they have increased the size of the allocation. It used to be twice as bad in the 4 or 5 years prior to the coalition starting to work in here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Eduardo.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Anna Livia Palazzo Angulo. I'm an English teacher and the secretary of the Salem-Keizer Coalition for Equality. Would you like my address? Okay. Chairman Starr, members of the Education Committee, I'm here in support of Senate Bill 897. For years, Oregon's bilingual education has suffered from a lack of funding and a lack of support, and therefore it's suffered a poor reputation. I say bilingual education, but that includes all English as a second language programs. like other good programs that the state has instituted, training professionals to carry out the programs is usually the last thing to be funded. And we have other examples of that. I think of the SIM and CAM and all the research that was poured into the standards, the new state standards. And then as a teacher, I came in on the first year that it was implemented, and lo and behold, there was no training or no money left to train the teachers on how to do it. And that has always been the case, in my opinion. True bilingual programs, which have been shown by best research to be the most effective in raising the academic achievement of second language students, and as well as effective ESL programs, English as a second language programs, most of those are few and far between. Most of what exists that I have seen and heard and have been to trainings where we've had teachers throughout the state there, most of what I hear about are just barely remedial classes that teach English to immigrants for a few months. Sometimes as much as a year, 2 or 3 years if they're really strong, and then they're dropped. And it's shown by research that you cannot even come close to attaining the academic vocabulary you need to study in that short of a time, especially with children. Anyway, the professionals teaching these programs are also few and far between. Most of the support staff are teachers or aides whose qualifying characteristic is their ability to speak one of the second languages. Though they're hardworking and devoted, they have little more ability to teach language in general than most of you in this committee. True bilingual programs and trained professionals are what need to be funded. With this accountability bill, the funds that have never been available for these needs will be put in the hands of those who know best the methods and research in the country for teaching these programs. There are a few critical parts of a truly effective and integrated bilingual and ESL or ELL multifaceted programs that I'd like to mention to you. One is that all the teachers in the whole district, especially those, of course, working with students of other languages, which usually ends up being most of the teachers in the district, will have at least one or two students of another language in their class. That they all be trained in sheltered content instruction, which is something that I took training on and thought, why wasn't this included in my teacher program in college? These methods improve the performance of all students in the class. They contribute to a teacher's ability to teach to the needs of a diverse classroom, including their learning styles, learning challenges, learning language challenges, and failing students and excelling students. And the same methods that help all students especially help language learners. This assumes that the student is a smart person, even if he doesn't understand the language, and that he can learn the content and the thinking, if you will, of the lesson just without having to know that lesson in English word for word, but still understand and learn. Another factor is that all teachers in the district need to receive cultural awareness training on an ongoing basis, because one factor that seems to limit the learning of the students that we work with is the fact that their teachers don't have any understanding of their cultural differences, lifestyle, even what their language, how their language causes them to have different, different ways of emoting is what I'm trying to say here. Different ways of implying and things like that. A third problem is that the teacher-student ratio needs to be reduced, obviously, for all students, especially for those in need of extra teaching because of language and other barriers. And a fourth, of course, is that all of the devoted but untrained second language aides, who are often the minority community's only liaison and counselor also, they need to be given the opportunity to be trained in a Grow Your Own Professionals program. And I believe that the bilingual funds that we have, the English as a Second Language funds that we have, would provide enough to do these things that need to be done if the people in those departments ever got the real share of the money that they need to get. There are many other things that bilingual funds could be used for, but these are the ones that everyone I've talked to in bilingual departments and in bilingual trainings agree on as the most important. And these are the ones that they're constantly trying to accomplish right now with their meager funds, but they're never fully succeeding. All of the state funds that are allocated to follow these language minority students should be directly used on their academic teaching and learning. They should be given only to the professionals who know what really works for the success of these students. They should not be allowed to be diverted to general school funds under the excuse that whatever enhances the school will also enhance these students as part of that school also. This is a poor and weak and unethical excuse for administrators to use who are overseeing mostly the failure of so many of these language minority students. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? We need to move along, please.
Chairman Starr, members of the committee, my name is Samuel Davila. My address is 1339 Baker Street, Salem, Oregon, Northeast. Salem, I repeated that. I come to you today as a private citizen, but I'd also like to let you know, some of you may be familiar with me. I am the former director of the Commission on Hispanic Affairs. So some of the things I'm going to be saying, information I've collected through working with the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, and I'm currently the vice chair of the Salem Kedger Coalition for Equality, working with Mr. Eduardo Angulo, volunteer, of course. Well, I come to you today in support of Senate Bill 897, which would direct the Department of Education to conduct a study of the money spent by school districts, money raised or received, appropriated by ELL funds. I personally have been appalled in not being able to clearly find out how schools define the rationale behind the use of ELL and ESL funds. As a member of the coalition, the Salem-Kaiser Coalition for Equality, I have sat through various meetings with school board members who cannot tell, let alone understand, how these monies are spent. As a director of the Commission on Hispanic Affairs, in meeting with various community members throughout the state, I have found out that no one clearly understands how these monies are spent either. As you all know, the 2002 Oregon Progress Board reported that Latinos are dead last in academic success compared to all other minorities. Latinos currently, there are currently more Latinos graduating, or that is, being sent to prisons than actually enrolling into college. That presents a grave problem. Understanding how these monies are used is not just good business policy, but it is good public policy. That's why I encourage you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you. Appreciate
Thank you.
Your testimony.
Thank you very much. Thank
Steve?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Novick, Legislative Coordinator for the Department of Education, and Laurie Wimmer-Whalen from the Oregon Education Association would like to join me to make a few remarks. The superintendent will be pleased to comply with this bill. A study of this nature is something that she would contemplate whether there was a bill or not, but it might be useful to have the bill in place. The department has received information in the past from districts on how much money they spent on ELL programs, and we suspect, based on what we've received, that some of the information is a bit misleading. There are problems with accounting for, you know, if you've got somebody who spends one person who spends part of their time dealing with ELL issues and others not, I think the districts have had some problems figuring out how to deal with that. So what we have is, you know, a collection of some districts for which it looks like they're dedicating a lot of resources to ELL programs, others that appear not to be dedicating much resources at all, and there's some concern that maybe they're not doing much for those kids. And others where we know districts are doing something, but if you look at the numbers, it doesn't look like they are.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
Steve, do your districts do a municipal audit?
Yes, Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, I believe they do.
Good, because we require that of charter schools, and I would hope that the public school system could keep track of their finances as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, point well taken. What the department would hope to do in this study is to hire an ELL specialist to go out to a few schools sort of in each category, the ones that seem like they figured out how to account for what they do when they're doing something, schools where we think something's going on but the numbers don't indicate they're doing something, and some of the schools where we might fear that not much work is being done for ELL kids, and based on that come back with a report and some recommendations as to how the department can rephrase the question when it goes out to ask all districts for an accounting. And maybe when we do that, we can ask, make some suggestions as to, you know, if you're doing X, here's one way you might think about accounting for it. And then once we get information back from all districts, then we can report to the legislature on, here's what our focus study in a few districts found, and based on going back out to the districts and saying, okay, we really need it, we really want good information, and here's how some ways to present it, the information we received.
Now, may I ask a serious
yes.
question? This is a serious question. Is this language adequate for what you are going to be getting? And I hate to muddy the water, but I mean, should there be more specific language in requesting information about this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, we think that the language in the bill is, based on our understanding of it, which we're explaining to you at this point, we think that it's adequate for us. And we're interpreting that language in the way that I've just described.
Okay. You will then write administrative rules based on this language and require that school districts respond, because this is a legislative direction, right?
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, I don't know that we will write administrative rules, but we would hope that based on the fact that the legislature will have passed a bill, the districts will understand, and based on what assistance we're able to provide them, the districts will understand this is a subject the legislature and the department are interested in, and we hope that we get very good cooperation.
I guess my feeling is that just directing you guys to do a study is not adequate language, but that's all I can.
Thank you, Senator Morissette. Lori.
Good afternoon. For the record, Mr. Chair and committee members, Lori Wimmer Whalen with the Oregon Education Association, and we too support the bill. And very quickly, I will say, in one of our last two representative assemblies, that our members who are involved in English language learning education programs voiced concern and passed a resolution directing its lobbyists to make sure that we in some way sought a better use of those dollars that were identified as ELL dollars, recognizing that the distribution formula is an allocation formula and not a mandate for expenditures of specific dollars to specific programs at the district level, and we do recognize local control. But we do feel that that this situation warrants some further study, and we think this might be the perfect approach to answer that. And I will close with just one final thought, which is that I think some of this is a symptom of the greater problem that we all know exists, which is inadequate resources to do what we'd all like to do for the students of Oregon, no matter which ones we're talking about.
Thank you very much. Real important you get that on the record.
Thank you.
Any further questions? I haven't heard that message before.
Yeah, that's all right. One note soon.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With that, we're going to close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 897. The chair would entertain a motion.
I will move that we refer this measure to Ways and Means rather than go directly to the floor, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Deckard has moved Senate Bill 897 to Ways and Means. With a due pass recommendation.
No. Due pass this.
I need to. Now, is there a fiscal listed?
There's no fiscal, but there is a referral on our.
Okay. Well, I.
Why is there? I've never seen so many referrals.
We could rescind.
With the whole
if there is no visible fiscal impact, I would move to rescind.
This doesn't need to go to Ways and
Ways and Means.
We just received testimony that they would be hiring someone with experience to go out and...
Okay, that's fine.
I think that since this came from the president's office, maybe we would go with that.
Okay.
Any further discussion?
Well, I'll discuss when we do the final vote. Are we voting on the bill now? Or just
That's what we're doing.
Okay, well, to the ways. Okay. I think this is an inadequate direction. I think it's a cop-out in some ways, and I would have made the language much stronger with some consequences of not funding the programs, but I understand what the testimony was from the OEA is that the money goes to the districts and there's no strings attached, and so they use it for whatever, for other things, and I think that attacks the integrity of the program, and it just seems to me that there needs to be better guidance and management. Now, I'm not talking about mismanagement at all. This is a new administration, it's a new bill. But I would hope that if we do dedicate money to a particular program, that there be some way of tracking that. And if the money is not being used, that it simply be withdrawn and not allow the district to use it for something else with the pretext that they're going to use it for this program. So I think the intent is good, and I hope it works, but I hope that we can visit this next session, revisit it, and if something isn't done, we do it differently.
Thank you, Senator. I think that what we're hoping here is that we'll get some guidance from the study to help us make good decisions next legislative session. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Crayoli.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Dixon. Aye.
Aye. I've received the necessary majority. Senate Bill 897 is moved to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Close that work session and open a public hearing on our next bill, which is House Bill 2894. And we have Steve Novick and Randy Harnish
and Representative
Phil Barnhart, front and center. Thank you, Representative.
Thank you. Mr. Chair.
Tell us about your bill.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Phil Barnhart, State Representative from District 11. When I was appointed by the Secretary of State to represent House District 55 in Eastern Oregon, I met the Superintendent of Schools in Paisley, Mark Jeffries, who pointed out a problem with the statute which led to this bill. I refer to ORS 327.103, which allows the superintendent of public instruction to allow a school district up to a year to correct a deficiency that might lead to the school being found to be non-standard. If a school is non-standard, then it faces the possibility of losing a portion of its state school fund. The problem that the a good superintendent from Eastern Oregon pointed out to me was that some school districts are having trouble maintaining the required standards because of lack of funds and not because of some other problem within the school district which they could readily resolve and which this statute was written around. So the bill proposes to allow the superintendent to exceed to allow the time for the problem to be dealt with to exceed 12 months in the event that the superintendent found that the difficulty resulted from inadequate funds available for the school. This is not a bill that I am happy to be bringing to you, but it's one that appears to be necessary. As I understand it, there are now 25 school districts which are out of compliance, and without this bill, some of them will likely be found non-standard and be deprived of state funding, and of course their graduates might have difficulty getting into college. That's the sum substance of the bill. I understand that the Department of Education supports the bill with an amendment. They have proposed the dash twos. I've read the dash twos. They're fine. I think it deals with some minor language problems. the superintendent exercises this authority under under criteria established by the Board of Education.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank
your
you,
problem,
Mr.
the solution for it. Thank you. And what happened to my other two witnesses here? There they are. Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Novick, legislative coordinator for the Department of Education. The superintendent does support this bill, although she frankly hopes that she will not have to exercise the power that it grants, because she hopes that our school funding problems be resolved in such a way that schools won't wind up not being standard for lack of money. But the bill does what Representative Barnhart described it as doing. The amendment that we proposed is, as Representative Barnhart said, something to simply clarify some language. The original bill stated in subsection 3B that the superintendent may allow an extension of time that exceeds 12 months if the superintendent determines that the reason for the deficiencies is primarily the lack of adequate funds based on criteria adopted by the State Board of Education. The intent, and this was discussed in the House Committee, but the bill was rushed through lack of time with the understanding that we would make an attempt to change it here. The intent was that the superintendent would first make a determination that the problem is lack of money, and then the state board would develop criteria to determine whether that lack of money in this case is sufficient to grant an extension. The way the language came out in the original version of the bill, it sort of looks as if the state board is developing criteria to use in determining whether lack of money is the real problem. So the amendment simply switches the sentence around to clarify the original intent, which is if the superintendent finds, okay, the real problem here is lack of money, then she looks to criteria established by the board to determine whether that's a sufficient reason in a particular case to grant an extension.
Clear. Thank you. Please.
Senator Starr, members of the committee, this we look at as analogous perhaps to catastrophic health insurance, something that you hope you never have to use, but you're glad if you have it.
Excuse me for the record.
I'm sorry. My name's Randy Harnish with the Department of Education. We are currently, as you mentioned, Senator Starr, that we have a 25-plus school districts that have taken action to shorten their school year. If they are able to come into compliance within the statutory framework, then we don't have a problem. If, in fact, they are not able to come into compliance within the statutory framework, we're limited to a 12-month extension. This bill would allow as Steve mentioned, would allow the superintendent under defined criteria to go beyond that 12-month extension if the decision is, or the non-compliance is based on lack of funds. We hope we don't have to use it, but in the event that we do, this would allow us to perhaps deal with those few districts without having to declare them non-standard.
Any questions? Thank you, sir. Appreciate the testimony. Anyone else desiring to testify? Not, we've closed the public hearing on the work session on House Bill 2894. The chair would entertain a motion for the dash two amendments.
Mr. Chair, I would move the dash two amendments to House Bill 2894.
Senator Morissette has moved the dash two amendments to House Bill 2894. Discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Senator Ferrioli is excused.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2894 as amended to the floor of the Senate with the Duke's recommendation.
Senator Morissette has moved House Bill 2894 as amended to the House floor, or to the Senate floor, with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion?
Are we going to bypass Ways and Means on this one, or just?
Is there a Ways and Means on here?
We are. Thank you. Thank you, Senator Deckard. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Ferrioli. Senator Morissette.
Aye.
Vice Chair Deckard.
Aye.
Chair Stone.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 2894 is moved to the Senate floor.
I would be happy to carry this bill.
And Senator Morissette will carry the bill.
Try to persuade my colleagues that this is not a escape hatch to not come up with money to fund schools. I'll try to persuade them of that.
All right. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3557. Tell us what the bill is about.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3557 exempts public charter schools that are operated by school districts from the requirement that the charter school be established as a nonprofit organization. This also declares an emergency and is effective on passage.
Very good. Mr. Green.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Green representing the Oregon School Boards Association. Thank you for hearing the bill today. This bill comes about to change the charter school law in one minor section of the law that deals with when a charter school is started by a school district. Back in 1999, when we created the charter school law, we envisioned most charter schools coming from outside entities, parents, groups of folks, other folks besides school districts starting them. As we've seen through the creation of charter schools, school districts are taking part in this law, utilizing it to create programs for their kids, for their districts, and with No Child Left Behind coming online, they're using it also to address the needs of kids that may be falling behind. Part of the law requires that when an applicant is going to become a charter school, that they have to form a nonprofit corporation under Oregon laws. That's a pretty easy thing to do. You file your bylaws and articles of incorporation with the Secretary of State's office. I think it's a $15 filing fee. But the part about having to create a 501c3 with the Internal Revenue Service is quite costly. School districts currently have a governing board, their school board, and they also have the ability to give tax deductions for folks when they give information or they give articles to the school. The reason we put this in 1999 was, one, when they created a charter school, we wanted to know what their governance structure was, what their board of directors looked like. And two, if folks gave computers, paper, desks, cars, what have you to the charter schools, we want to be sure they got the tax deduction for it. It's duplicative to have that when the school district is creating them. And we have instances right now in school districts across the state that are trying to create charter schools, and they've come up against this. One was the Center for Advanced Learning, which is up in the East Metro part of Multnomah County, where four school districts have come together to form a charter school. Their counsel, John Osborne, called me during the interim and said, Jim, is there something we could do about this to eliminate this requirement? Because we formed the nonprofit, but it's going to cost about $1,500 for those four districts to create a 501c3. It's unnecessary when districts are the ones doing this. I guess today's kind of Paisley Day in the Senate Education Committee, because another person who called me was Mark Jeffries, the superintendent of Paisley. They're looking at becoming a charter school district. For the mere fact that they get the federal funds to do this, but they are losing dollars because of they're losing kids, and they don't have the funds with which to create a 501c3 right now, but they're in the process of becoming a charter school district. Columbia County has also called me. They have a consortium of school districts that are looking at forming professional technical schools in all the school districts but Rainier, run through the Northwest Regional Education Service District up in Hillsboro, and they've contacted me to say this is expensive, it's costly for the school district, it's unnecessary. Is there something we can do? That's why House Bill 3557 is here today. I don't believe anybody opposes it. I've spoken to the folks at the Oregon Charter School Service Center with Rob Kramer, the Oregon Department of Education. There hasn't been anybody opposed to it. The vote was not unanimous in the House. There was some discussion about the ability of school districts to start creating charter schools willy-nilly throughout the state. There are adequate protections in the law. You can't become a charter school district if you have more than one building. There's still the requirement that it's voluntary for your staff to be assigned to a charter school, and it's voluntary for students to be assigned. So I would urge you not to heed those cautions. I don't think you're going to see school districts running around creating charter schools out of all but one of their buildings. They don't have the ability to do that. They can't assign staff to all that one building, and they sure as heck can't have all the students go there. This is simply a mechanism to allow those school districts that are looking to create charter schools a way to save some money, get rid of the duplicative requirements for a nonprofit and for a 501c3, and give them the ability to go ahead and create these charter schools without having the additional costs there. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
You've done well. Any questions?
Well,
Senator Morissette.
I guess it's a question, but it kind of bothers my mind. I have been involved in the startup of three 501c3s, and we got attorneys to volunteer their time. Didn't cost us anything, and I can't imagine a school district not being able to form a 501c3.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, there are school districts that have, and they form these charter school boards, and they try to get an attorney and an accountant to serve on them. Some of them aren't able to find those folks. Paisley has had a difficult time finding an attorney in their community to serve on that role and volunteer their time. So they are looking at having to hire somebody to make that 501c3 application. It's not that difficult, but if you haven't done it, it is a timely process, and you have to fill the forms out properly, or the IRS returns them to you and says, start the process. That's all over again.
Yeah. Now, are you sure there are no ulterior motives to this bill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Morissette, if there are, I'm not aware of them. I'm trying to help out a handful of school districts that are calling me.
I think highly of you and respect your credibility. I will support the bill.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard.
Jan and I were noticing that you are now sporting a goatee. I didn't notice that earlier today when I spoke to you. Is that, what's the status?
Maybe
of that?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Deckard, I didn't paint it on. Actually, up until a couple of weeks ago, I had a full beard, but now it's softball season. I play softball, and I think it, you know, it helps me play softball better if I go to the goatee.
Makes him look more macho.
It's a dream. I don't know.
Close the public hearing, open the work session on House Bill 3557. Chair, to entertain a motion. Let's move the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move House Bill 3557 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Deckard has moved House Bill 3557 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion?
I think it ought to go to Ways and Means.
The clerk call the roll.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. I received the necessary majority. House Bill 3557 to move to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Chair will carry. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 456. And Jan. We've had this before us once before.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we did have this before us before. This prohibits a public school administrator, teacher, counselor, or nurse from recommending to a student's parent or legal guardian that a student seek a prescription with the intent of affecting the mood, behavior, or thought processes of the student. It passed out of committee on a 3-1 vote. And it went to the floor, and it was pulled back from the floor due to a constitutional problem discovered by the sponsor.
Senator Morissette.
That was a perceived constitutional problem. I would like to, can I just speak from here?
Okay. Yes.
I'd like to what I have is a couple of pages of material that I got off the web, and this is very relevant to this bill. The federal RH 1170 was referred to a subcommittee on election reform on March 23rd of this year, and this is a federal piece that says, as a condition of receiving funds under any program or activity administered by the Secretary of Education, each state shall develop and implement policies and procedures prohibiting school personnel from requiring a child to obtain a prescription for a controlled substance in Schedule 2 under Section 202, Subsection C of the Controlled Substances Act as a condition for attending school or receiving services. And then I go on to say, in 2001, two precedent-setting laws were passed in Connecticut and Minnesota that prevent school personnel from coercing or recommending that parents drug their children, especially as a prerequisite for attending class. Over 14 states have either passed laws or are currently considering the legislation. Now, on the second page is a piece from the Washington Post on May 8th, that 2003, that does go into this. I have a lengthy printout detailing what other states have done. And so when we took this bill out of committee and I circulated, I got a rather negative response, because people who have children or know someone who has children who use Ritalin or some other drug say, you're not going to take this drug away. You know, would you like to ride around with my five-year-old who is wild? And after conversations with Don Stetcher, who is a representative of Novartis, who makes this drug, and Don is a proponent of this bill because Don's own child was threatened not to come to school unless Don put him on this drug, and he went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you don't need this drug. Your child is a very bright child, and your child needs to be stimulated and dealt with differently. And so this bill has support, it has brought support, and I think it's time that we stepped up, because the feds are going to pass a law that say unless states do address this situation, they will not be able to receive the federal dollars. So I think it's an important bill, and I urge your support.
Any questions? Yes, Senator Decker.
A couple for Senator Morissette. Do we know the federal government is going to pass? I mean, I see that it was referred to a subcommittee.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, I guess I can share with you some more detail on that, but it was the Secretary of Education is a proponent of this bill at the national level, and so whether I have no reason to believe it is not going to pass. Other states have been doing this, and either, as I mentioned, either 16 states have already passed laws or are considering them. So it's something that I think is recognized as a problem in some areas. I did have phone calls from Klamath Falls by parents saying that they were denied entrance to school. We talked to the parents, we talked to the superintendent. They were not denied coming back to school. They were simply told that they should consider very strongly putting their child on drugs to control the behavior. And there were several instances we checked it out, and it was not a denial, but it is so. Direct answer to your question, I don't know that this is going to pass at the federal level for sure, but I know it is referred to the committee and it is likely to be passed.
Further questions? Senator Decker?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a thought. When this bill came before us the first time, and we've had extensive testimony, so we don't have to rehash it, I voted no, mostly because I'm just very, very reluctant for the state to mandate, do this, don't do this, do this, don't do this. I have met with Senator Morissette a lot on this bill, or many times. And though I'm hesitant to support it, I will support it, because at least I see there, and met with the representative of the drug company who produced the drug, who this might in some ways provide fewer sales for, but he did also indicate that he sees the need out there to at least have medical professionals prescribing drugs. So with that, Mr. Chair, I will, on a very, very close call for me, support this bill.
Thank you. We'll close the public hearing, open the work session on Senate Bill 456. We'll entertain a motion.
I thought Senator Deckard was going to make a motion. Mr. Chair, I will move Senate Bill 456 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morissette moves Senate Bill 456 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended, there was an amendment there.
456A.
Yes, thank you.
Correct for the record. And there's no further discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. Having received the necessary majority, Senate Bill 456A is moved to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
I would defer to Senator Decker to carry the bill, but I will do it, though.
All right. Senator Morissette.
You don't want me carrying the bill.
Senator Morissette will carry the bill. And now we move on to public hearing on House Bill.
May I make one on
2744?
We have to stop passing laws that mandate people to do things. That's the problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Jan, introduce us to House Bill 2744. Public hearing on House Bill 2744.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2744A comes to us from the House Education Committee. They spent quite a good deal of time on this over on that side. It does a number of things. It modifies the Certificate of Initial Mastery requirements and delays the Certificate of Advanced Mastery implementation from September 1, 2004 to September 1, 2008. It reduces the academic subjects in which students must demonstrate proficiency to receive a SIM to English, math, and science, which is the same as the federal No Child Left Behind requirements. You'd get a SIM mandatory subjects would be those three. In effect, eliminate the arts, PE, history, geography, economics, civics, and second languages, which is in the bill now for SIM. It maintains the requirements that the ODE have state standards in the academic areas of English, math, science, history, geography, economics, civics, PE, the arts, and second languages. It would also direct ODE to develop academic content standards in the area of health. It directs the ODE to develop assessments in the areas of history, geography, economics, civics, in addition to the existing assessments in English, math, and science. It requires school districts to still offer instruction in English, math, science, history, geography, economics, civics, PE, health, the arts, and second languages. It also allows school districts to offer SIM endorsements in the areas of arts, PE, health, history, geography, economics, civics, and second languages. In granting these endorsements to the SIM, school districts would use state assessments in the areas of history, geography, economics, civics, but local assessments based on state standards would be used for the endorsements in the arts, PE, and second languages, and I believe health. It prohibits the Department of Ed or the school district from requiring student portfolios as evidence of proficiency for their SIM. And it also directs the State Board of Ed to establish a minimum number of work samples that a student must complete in each area to receive a SIM or a SIM endorsement. And this also declares an emergency and is effective July 1, 2003. We have invited testimony.
Invite testimony. I believe this also delays implementation of CAMP.
Yes, from September 1, 2004 to September 1, 2008.
All right. Department of Ed. Why don't we have Costa come on up? So you're with us here. Please go ahead and.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Pat Burke. I'm the Deputy Superintendent for Education Policy at the Oregon Department of Education. Pleasure to be with you this afternoon. Here to talk about House Bill 2744. Superintendent Castillo supports House Bill 2744, which has, as you know, been overwhelmingly approved by the House of Representatives. I want to take this opportunity to supplement some of the statements that House Education Committee Chair Backlin and Vice Chair Hobson will be making later today. First of all, just to reiterate some of what the committee administrator just provided, House Bill 2744 retains our current system of standards and assessments. It's a system that has, I believe, been key to seeing rising academic achievement in our state, even during a time of declining resources. And at the same time, House Bill 2744 makes some what we think are appropriate changes in the existing law to address many of the concerns that have been raised by teachers, parents, and administrators, some of that information before this committee. It is the product of lengthy and thoughtful deliberations by the House Education Committee, and I think it reflects a considerable give and take and compromise on a variety of issues to fashion a way through this. Now, what does it do? It does, as you just heard, limit the subjects required for a certificate of initial mastery to English, and English in Oregon is both reading and writing in separate assessments, mathematics, and science. And those are also the three areas that we have fully implemented statewide already. We have those assessments in place. They're fully functional, and they are those that are required by the new federal No Child Left Behind Act. Secondly, it removes from the current law the requirement of the four additional subjects, as you also just heard, arts, second languages, physical education, and the social sciences, that they be incorporated, removes them as mandatory subjects for the Certificate of Initial Mastery. But it's very clear to recognize that districts may choose to offer the Certificate of Initial Mastery endorsements, and many districts have indicated that they would do that in one or more areas, and that students have an opportunity to meet those advanced standards. Instruction in these areas would still be required, and the state would be setting the high standards in these content areas. Third, it postpones mandatory implementation of the Certificate of Advanced Mastery for 4 years. We expect that there are districts, we know that there are districts that have already gone way down the road toward implementation of the CAM. We don't want to disrupt that work. Those districts, we expect, will even be leaders as we continue to do this work over the next 4 years. Students from some of those schools, as you may recall, offered some very enthusiastic testimony in committee hearings about the role of the CAM in their schools. We would therefore be wanting to support those schools that have done the work but postponing full implementation statewide for another 4 years. Now, this law is very consistent with the new federal No Child Left Behind Act. I know we've had a lot of conversation about that. The federal law requires that each state have its own set of high, rigorous academic content standards and its own set of assessments in place in the subject areas of English, math, and science. The federal government has already approved the Oregon standards and the Oregon process of assessment for purposes of No Child Left Behind. You should have a letter from 2001 indicating federal approval of the Oregon system. And one purpose of House Bill 2744 is to focus our efforts as an agency and school districts, to help focus our efforts on those areas that are required under the new federal law. Now, there's been a lot of conversation about testing and assessment and off-the-shelf tests and why we should not have an off-the-shelf assessment. Some have suggested that we would exchange these assessments that we currently have in place and select one or more of those produced by private companies. In fact, House Bill 2744 does not specifically address this question of whether or not we should buy a publisher's test. If it were made to be shown that it was good policy, if the financial information indicated that it was, in fact, more economical, House Bill 2744 does not in any way preclude us from moving in that direction. But having said that, the reason that we have not gone the route of a publisher's test are several. First, any publisher's test would have to be remodeled if you will, or refocused, the technical term is realigned, or geared to the Oregon content standards. And we would have to pay for that remodeling. The federal government has not established national standards for academic achievement in English, math, or science. It requires each state to develop its own set of standards, as we have done, and it requires the state to have assessments that are geared to that state's standards. Our current assessment system has been approved by the federal government for purposes of No Child Left Behind. Adopting another system would require extensive development work and would require that we seek and gain approval from the federal government again. They have been very clear that if we alter our current system, we would have to resubmit for approval. We are proud of the fact that our test questions, those that appear on the Oregon assessments, are written by Oregon teachers under contract with the department. We have developed a bank of 30,000 test questions, and they have been written and approved and tested in Oregon classrooms by Oregon teachers. They also, our Oregon teachers, also score the work samples that are submitted as part of the performance assessments, the writing samples and math problem-solving activities that are key features of the assessment. I believe that's a twofold benefit. One is that it keeps Oregon teachers directly involved in this work, and secondly, as I know you have heard in testimony, it is an outstanding professional development activity for our teachers. We do contract a lot of the work that is involved in preparing and distributing the assessments. We work with private companies for much of the work involved, including printing, shipping, and scoring of the multiple choice assessments. Even once a publisher's test were to be remodeled to address our current content standards, the research shows that the cost of administering the publisher's test, such as the Iowa Test of Basic Skills or the Stanford 9 or other examples, would be even more expensive on an ongoing per student basis than the cost of administering the tests that we have already developed. Now, I know there have also been, Mr. Chair, questions about portfolios and work samples as we've discussed this legislation. In the course of our discussions, there's been a great deal of talk about the role of portfolio and the role of work samples. And House Bill 2744 addresses both of these topics. House Bill 2744 would clarify that students, teachers, and districts are not required to maintain portfolios of student work as part of the assessment process. The current law only stated that assessments, quote, may include portfolios, close quote, and that language seems to have generated confusion. The House committee adopted Representative Tootie Smith's proposal that this language be eliminated from the existing law. The House committee heard concerns from teachers about the volume of work samples, classroom writing, and math problem-solving exercises that were required for the certificate. I believe, and the House committee believed, that it is important to include classroom work in the assessment process. I think that's very important to say connected to classrooms. However, it appears that some districts have required a much greater number of work samples than what the legislation or the original legislation of the state requires. And the bill addresses this by requiring districts to obtain permission from the Department of Education and State Board in order to require a larger number of work samples than is required in by the state. In addition, the department is committed to working with districts to ensure that everyone understands that the work samples necessary for a certificate of initial mastery can be completed at any time during grades 9 through 12. I believe the legislation is clear. It says that at the time of graduation. In some districts and in some schools, the perception that a SIM is a, quote, 10th grade certificate has resulted in unnecessary pressure on the 10th grade level. We think that we can improve that situation. Students and teachers actually have a longer period of time to create that body of work, and we will work to clarify, as a result of this legislation, those work samples and that they can be completed throughout high school. Mr. Chair, I'll end my formal testimony there and turn to my colleague, Mr. Rhodes.
Thank you. I'm going to request that you allow the representatives to come forward and present their testimony.
Oh,
if you would step back for just a moment, would you please, and allow us, Senator Representative Hobson and Representative Backlund to come forward. I'm sorry to disturb you that way, but
also known as the SIN team.
Among other things, no.
I was going to say that. Thank you for leading me through it.
Please.
Thank you, Senator Starr, and thank you for inviting Representative Hobson and I to testify. I was watching on television when Jan gave the summary, and I think her summary may be longer than perhaps my testimony. It was a mouthful. I wanted to give a little bit of a history that led to the development of House Bill 2744. Well before the session began in January, I began receiving emails about this subject, and they were pretty strident. Many were opposed to our current SIM-CAM program, and that prompted me to kind of begin to look into the programs as we have now to try to get some a greater understanding. I spent a lot of time communicating with a number of people, school superintendents, teachers, others, and I made it a point to try to get somewhat informed. And so at that point, then I decided that we needed to have something, a good law that would be between, or would be a nice compromise between what we have now and the other rather extreme measure or proposal, which was to eliminate everything from what we have now. And so in the course of our public hearings, we had many informational meetings. We had a town hall in Eugene. We had a night meeting here at the Capitol. We had a night meeting at the OMSI in Portland. We truly heard from a lot of people, and our email, of course, was very extensive, too. We heard from non-professional educators, parents, students, and we heard from a lot of professional folks as well. Out of this preparation, I would say, we wrote the bill, 2744, and I would say, to sum it up, to me, in my perspective, it's designed to maintain Oregon's high standards for our public schools, yet at the same time remove unnecessary regulatory burdens on our teachers and students. Now, this came about partly because I recognized that we were in a financial crunch, and that we would not have as much funding as I would like to have. So the intent was to do what I just indicated, plus streamline and modify our current law. And as you know, it was passed in 1991 and was amended in 1995. So you've heard many of the details of the bill. We managed to arrive at the finished product on the 18th Amendment. We certainly were open to ideas and suggestions and criticisms, and we worked our way through those. I think we had at least two committee members going in who were opposed, and by the time we finished hearing everything that we heard, having all the public meetings and the work sessions, I think every one of those members now that came around and were in favor of this bill. So it did pass out of our House Education Committee unanimously with a 6-0 vote. And it did pass the floor of the House with a 48-9 vote. Again, there were some skeptics. My belief was once people understood the details of the bill, they would be much more accepting of it. And that's been the pattern pretty much so far, in general, certainly. So that's kind of a general start, and I think probably it's a good time for me to stop, and I would be happy to answer questions, or I'd be even happier to turn the meeting over to Representative Hobson.
Any questions of Representative Backlund? Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Elaine Hobson, House District 32. And I'll just add a few key points to what my good friend Representative Backlund said. that we have done with this bill, and the bill actually maintains the high standards and the nationally recognized assessments have been in place, which superimposed a formal system rather than just having letter grades and seat time. We had gotten information from higher ed and the business community that they actually wanted more proof or accountability. It provides the accountability measures, and not just for the people who are receiving the end product, but also for teachers, for parents, for community members, decision makers, and, of course, the students themselves. From a practical point of view, it meets the requirements of No Child Left Behind, and it relates to the restructuring that has gone across the country. In fact, you may have read about some states who use what's called an exit or a high-stakes test, and they have hundreds, if not thousands, of students who aren't graduating because they haven't reached that goal. Here in Oregon, we decided not to be quite that almost punitive. On the other hand, it is an indication of the national focus on making sure that kids have learned before they graduate. If we were to introduce a new system at this time, in any shape or form, it would cost more, and there's a strong possibility that it wouldn't interact with our No Child Left Behind requirements. Our system has been approved by the federal government, and we do automatically fit into that and can keep up with that. It provides relief for teachers and the department and our fiscal concern. As Representative Backlund mentioned, it is very appropriate that we take a look at this time and we give teachers a chance to catch up and to integrate it even more. Teachers and principals and parents have had a number of years now with training, and the information is getting out so that they understand it. And during our testimony, we were given formal and official support from quite a list of the Association of Oregon Industries, the Oregon Business Council, Oregon School Board Association, Oregon Education Association, Intel. I don't know what that stands for. That may just be their name. The Oregon Business Association, the Oregon University System, Confederation of Oregon School Administrators, and the Quality Ed Commission. And I would say just to mention a few, but that's actually all I had. Higher ed is ready to step in and support and highlight this whole program. ODE and university system have linked these improvements of the two systems, and recent studies show that there is indeed progress being made. And finally, two small points. It has been developed, contrary to what people think, that it was a total top-down process. It really has been developed by the stakeholders, primarily teachers, but there have been site councils involved to a great extent. And my final point is that it has been modified in the 12 years. It's been modified a lot. And I tell you, I will be the first person here next session. If we have additional modifications to come, that's fine too, because I think it is and should always be a work in progress, and we change it to meet the needs of the students, the teachers, and the people who receive our product. So I'm also ready for questions, as long as they're not too hard. Representative Backlund is the chair of the committee. I would remind everyone.
Could I ask
Senator Morissette?
I promise I'll put a question mark at the end of what I say. I'll just read one of the emails that I got that I received. House Bill 2744 guarantees that we will never know how effective and efficient or inefficient PE programs are in Oregon schools. This comes at a time when our kids are drinking more soda pop, eating more supersized fast food meals with empty calories, spending more time in front of the computers and television sets, and unfortunately experience a drastic increase in rates of obesity, leading to lesser quality of life and higher health costs for the state. Now, are you aware of all of the data information now that is coming out about problems of obesity, level 2 diabetes, and lack of nutrition, and so on and so on? And I guess I'm concerned. I support the bill. I will enthusiastically support it. But I am disappointed, though, that we have taken PE out. And in 1999, I don't know if you remember, I served in a subcommittee or to put together a PE program that was going to be, you know, kick in the assessment this year, and now suddenly we're that's out of here again. So I hope you share my concern. That's a question mark.
Mr. Chair and Senator Morissette, thank you for that question because it's a very good one. This bill, 2744, frankly, we make the statement very plainly and very clearly that 2744 does not change graduation requirements in any way. And it does not change high school curriculum requirements in any way. The administrative rule says that there will be one credit of physical education in high school. That's the requirement. However, many students will take more than that, and some schools will have PE as a requirement beyond the state requirement. So there will be no change in that aspect. It is unfortunate that by streamlining and narrowing the subjects to be STEM subjects, it does remove a certain degree of value that physical education would have because of the assessments. But they're still available. They're still out there. Students through the SIM endorsement program could choose to take those. The school will make those available. The standards have been written. The assessments have been written. They would be administered locally. So I don't think it goes away, but it certainly is not as ideal as we would like. But it's certainly not going to go away. Physical education will remain important.
The other question is, and I have been assured by the Department of Education that the curriculum development for nutrition will continue, and they are adopting a new textbook, I guess, in 05, and that's my other concern, is that nutrition not suffer, and I think within the bill there's room to continue to develop that. Do you have that same understanding?
Senator Starr and Senator Morissette, I believe so. Yes, it's not saying you can't do this sort of thing. It's there if someone wants to go in that direction. A school district wants to go in that direction.
Mr. Chair, if I might add something too, in addition to the PE and the health areas that we were quite concerned about, foreign language and social studies were also discussed to a great extent. And to be really honest, and I think I can speak for my friend here, we probably would have liked to have kept everything in because we didn't want to diminish the value of anything. But it was a compromise position, and it seemed appropriate this time not to really take anything away, but to slow down the forward progress a little until we could get everybody on board. But again, the graduation requirements, as Representative Backlund said, and the focus is on everything, is foci on everything is still there. It's just that those particular assessment pieces will be much slower in coming on board. We weren't real happy with that either, but it seemed appropriate at this time.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, as a former longtime advanced placement U.S. history teacher, it pained me a great deal to move in the direction that we eventually settled. But again, it was an attempt to maintain high standards and still recognize our current situations, remove some burdens on students and teachers, and so this is what we came up with. I would, if I may, put in a pitch for the SIM itself. I don't know that that's been said. The value of a SIM has been questioned by many opponents or critics, but there is considerable value. The Oregon University System, using Oregon State University, just recently completed a study of freshman students taking a mathematics class at Oregon State University. They found that students with a SIM did much better academically than those who did not have a SIM. They found that the SIM was a good predictor of college success. The only one that's better would have been is a grade point average. The SIM holder is as good a predictor of college success as the SAT. And the good thing is about that, a SIM is given typically or awarded in the sophomore year, and the assessments are given in the sophomore year. Students who are motivated have then 2 years to work on weaknesses and improve their the quality of their educational background. SATs are typically given the senior year, which gives them less time. So you could argue that a SIM is particularly if it's presented in the right way, the SIM is very valuable to any kid who wants to go to college. I also think that the SIM, to me, has great intrinsic value. It sets standards, and a lot of students are challenged by standards, and it's not a grade point in this case or grade in the class. It's can you meet some standard. If we're talking golf, and I like to do that, the standard is par. And that's what you're shooting at, unless you're really good and maybe you're shooting at a birdie. But there is a standard. If we're going to take our pilot's license exam, there is a standard that we have to meet in order to win that pilot's license. I like that concept, and I think it just needs to be presented in maybe a different way. It's not a chore, but it's a challenge. It's an opportunity. So I think a SIM has value, and standards have value. So as the more I talk about this, the more pumped up I get here, and the more into it I am. And so I have no problem at all in indicating that I believe House Bill 2744 is a good product.
Questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Senator Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I ask just one question? I guess I had the same in reviewing the bill, and I congratulate you on the work, and I know that you put an incredible amount of time and energy and hearings into the product that we have before us. The one thing, and you touched on it in your testimony, that at least hit me was what you said, which is the loss of foreign language, or I don't know if you'd call it the loss, and you would know better than I of whether it's foreign language or PE or U.S. History and Social Studies. How in our districts across the state will they be able to deal with, if this goes to the governor's desk as signed, how will they deal with those three areas, which I find are important to me, in continuing to make the progress that I think we'd all at least hoped for?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator. I believe that the area that will be impacted to some extent will be the second language or foreign language area. We still have the high school graduation requirements with social studies, and I cannot imagine that any school district is going to drop U.S. history or world or whatever they happen to be answering. And the same is true with PE. They have the requirements for graduation. Foreign language, I believe, is one of those areas that is becoming very obvious to people. You really need to have that in order to be a real success. I think that unfortunately there may be some classes that will be cut, and I'm really sorry about that, but I see that as indicative of cutting music classes, art the other ones that we're going to be cutting as well. It's more a sign of the times and our financial circumstances rather than a sign of SIM requirements and those kinds of curricular instances in which we find ourselves. I hope not, but...
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Your hard work. Ozzie, please.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, I'm Ozzie Rosa, Confederation of Oregon School Administrators. And today I'm authorized to speak on behalf of John Marshall of OSBA as well, who's down in the other end of the building working on collective bargaining issues. And I'm sorry, but my first question has to be, what if I'd have said no when you said, would I get up and get out of their way?
You say you're retiring next month, right?
It just seemed like a question I ought to ask. I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I am here on behalf of my association to support House Bill 2744. You've heard the details. I want to just add a couple things. We believe that one thing that's really strengthened in the process we've gone through, and that's creating the core SIM, meaning math, English, and science, and then the opportunity to get SIM endorsements in the other areas. And we don't view it quite the way you're viewing, or the, some of the questions about your relegating some to a lesser standard, and I'll get back to that in a second. But our Education Policy Commission had a huge discussion, and that's 40 people from across the state, principals and superintendents and curriculum-type people. And out of that discussion happened to go on just the time this bill was in front of the House, and I came right from that meeting to testify. They wanted the SIM. Right now, the standards and assessment are left to local districts in some of these areas, and only part of it is by the state. And they wanted that the endorsement of these areas, that it meant the same thing in SIO as it did in Salem or did in Beaver or whatever. And so this concept, where in all the areas you're going to have state standards and state assessment developed, so that when a youngster decides, I want to specialize in this area and be really good at it, and everybody knows I'm good at it, they'll know it no matter where I went to school in Oregon. And so, and I don't view, we don't view the issue about, by not having all of them in the core SIM, that you're going to lose them necessarily. That isn't why you're going to lose things in schools. My kids in the elementary schools in Salem in the 70s had elementary PE, in which they learned nutrition, they did exercise. They had a full-time PE teacher working with middle elementary age kids, and we don't have now. But it's not because of the lack of standards and SIMs; it's the lack of money. Have had to make choices about what you offer, and you understand that, I think. And as we moved our standards higher, kids have to attend. Some kids reach high standard with very little effort and support. Other kids, it takes more effort and support. And as you set the standards higher and higher, you have to invest in being sure the kids are able to meet those standards. I don't know if you recall in the document that we prepared for you almost a decade now ago, our superintendents, that we talk about content standards and we talk about performance standards, but we've never spent, and we coined the term, opportunity to learn standards. We can't tell our kids you have to be this good and reach these goals if we don't provide the stuff that it takes to help them. And as we have shrunk our resources and raised the standards, it's more and more difficult for every kid to get everything done. And what you have before you here is that there is a core that we're going to call a SIM, English, Science, and Math. And then youngsters are going to be able to select the areas of their interest and reach very high standards in that area of interest. That doesn't mean that you still won't have PE offered or health offered in the Sprague High School. All kids will take that because of graduation requirements, and they'll get some training in that arena. Some will focus on, I want to pursue a career, I'm interested in health, nutrition, physical education, or arts, or whatever, and they will focus on that and go beyond and reach these standards that have been set by the state. And that's the difference. It isn't about what we're going to not do. What we're not going to do is be driven by economics, not by the existence of these standards. And I'd like us to focus on this. This lets youngsters show that they know. By the way, I don't know how many of you took opportunity to take the SIM exam that we offered you a couple weeks ago, and you were allowed to do it anonymously. But if you did it, you know a little bit about the kinds of things we're asking kids to know and do before we say you've earned a SIM. That's why the studies that are now coming out, our first batch of studies, that SIM holders that go to our Institute of Higher Ed do better than the other kids. Then the chair explained or offered that to you. It's because they are very high standards. If you have that level of ability when you leave our schools, you are going to do well. And what this does now is say the core SIM is there. And then, by the way, Ozzie Rose's son or somebody else's daughter or whatever, you can also select areas you want to focus on, so that when you get through with high school, in addition to the core, you have an endorsement that says you're at that level of performance in health, language arts, or whatever. Or not language, excuse me, second language or whatever. And that's the difference, and we think that will strengthen this effort over the next decade. And we encourage you to move the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Beth Ann Darby, and I'm here on behalf of the Oregon Education Association. And you have my testimony in front of you. I just want to say that OEA believes that House Bill 2744 is a reasonable modification of SIM requirements to align them with the No Child Left Behind Act, given the tough economic times that we're in. If I had come up before Chair Backlund and Representative Hobson, I would have had opportunity to be the first to say that House Bill 2744 leaves in place existing curriculum and graduation requirements that requires development of content standards and assessments in areas beyond the core of math, science, and English. OEA will not support anything less than a comprehensive education program for all students, and that includes fine arts, civics, PE, health, nutrition, second languages. And I think that it's important that students thrive, they stay in school, they gain self-esteem, and they are prepared to deal with our global economy because of opportunities available in a comprehensive education program. But again, given the tough economic times that we're in, House Bill 2744 is a reasonable modification of SIM requirements. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Very good testimony. John Valley.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chairman Starr and members of the committee for the opportunity to testify before you today. For the record, my name is John Valley, and I am the Oregon Advocacy Director for the American Heart Association. And I'm here to discuss why the American Heart Association actually opposes House Bill 2744. House Bill 2744 has gone through many changes since it was first introduced earlier this year in the House Education Committee, as you've heard earlier from previous testimony. And in many ways, it is an improvement to the original version of the bill. For example, this bill no longer makes all academic subject areas other than math, science, and English optional for schools to offer instruction in. The bill also creates statewide health education standards, an issue that this committee knows is important to the American Heart Association. Unfortunately, this bill takes the state backwards when it comes to physical education policy. Back in 1999, the legislature passed House Bill 3307, a bill that both Senator Deckard and Senator Morissette co-sponsored with others when they were in the House, and Senator Morissette spoke of this bill earlier in the hearing. In fact, in the Senate, the vote was 25 yes votes and only one no vote. Both Senator Starr and Senator Farioli supported the bill just 4 years ago. House Bill 3307 not only required the development of statewide physical education standards, but also required local school districts to administer assessments of those standards by the 2003-2004 school year. House Bill 2744 overturns that public policy by making assessment of physical education by the local school districts optional. That is the main reason we cannot support House Bill 2744 in its current version. The importance of assessment is obvious when you listen to the comments of both the supporters of the bill and see how other academic subject areas are treated. Both Chairman Backlund and Vice Chair Hobson of the House Education Committee stressed the importance of assessment during their floor speeches when the House voted on this bill earlier this month and previously during this hearing. Representative Hobson talked about how SIM equals standards, assessment, and accountability, emphasizing that accountability is a key for student learning. We would agree that assessment is key in order to make sure students are receiving quality curriculum based on the statewide standards. But in House Bill 2744, the only assessment that is required is for math, science, and English. It's apparent that both the federal government and the state government have put a high importance on assessment based on testimony I heard in the House Education Committee. With the No Child Left Behind law, the federal government has required testing for math, science, and English at the state level. As I understand it, representatives from the federal government who visited Oregon earlier this year actually praised the state for the work it had done around assessment, and that was echoed today during previous testimony. However, with all the attention given to assessment around those subject areas, every other academic subject area around assessment has optional assessment requirements. Such an education policy is unacceptable. What House Bill 2744 does is prioritize three subject areas over all others. For example, it's completely optional for a school to offer a SIM endorsement in a subject area other than math, science, and English. So even though there are potential for SIM endorsements being offered, the school district has the discretion whether to offer them or not. Then, if a SIM endorsement is offered in a particular subject area, such as physical education, a student cannot receive a SIM endorsement in physical education unless they first receive a regular or core SIM, as it was referred to earlier. Which means passing the SIM requirements for math, science, and English before a student can get a SIM endorsement in a different subject area. Another problem with the bill is that even though it is still optional, the state at least provides a statewide assessment system for history, geography, economics, and civics. For subjects such as physical education and health education, there is not even an option for school districts to utilize a statewide assessment system if they wanted to. The message that is being sent is that English, science, and math are the important subjects that the government will put resources behind, while the rest of the subjects will have to just have to make do. As I stated earlier, the Heart Association has been involved in promoting the delivery of quality physical education for several years in Oregon. Back in 1999, we were proud to support many legislators, including everyone on this committee, who voted for House Bill 3307 in order to create statewide standards for physical education and have local assessment done on those standards starting this fall. To say that the bill did not work or was unsuccessful would be premature because it has not had a chance to succeed as of yet. Passage of House Bill 2744 will guarantee that we will never know whether or not assessment would improve delivery of quality physical education in Oregon. What we do know is that physical inactivity together with poor eating habits contribute significantly to the development of obesity, high blood pressure, and heart disease. Echoing some of the comments that Senator Morissette mentioned earlier, currently in Oregon, 28% of 8th graders and 21% of 11th graders are currently overweight. Only 70% of 8th graders and 50% of 11th grade students meet the minimum recommendation for physical activity. Between 1994 and 2001, obesity among Oregon adults has increased by 59%. Oregon's adult obesity rate is at 22%, which is the highest of any state west of the Rockies. So the issue around obesity is a growing one, not only in the country, but here in Oregon as well. That is why we're concerned about what we consider a step back when it comes to physical education compared to the current law and what this law would be promoting. I heard the earlier testimony that House Bill 24 is a reasonable compromise for meaning the No Child Left Behind Act, and I believe that's probably correct. But when you're looking at the other subject areas, there is a lack of assessment. Everything is optional. For PE and health, even though health education standards will be created, there is no guarantee that there will be any type of assessment at the local level. I've heard people say, well, that will just happen based on the integrity and the professionalism of teachers. We at the Heart Association can't make that jump to guarantee that will happen. And obviously, there's been a lot of assurances around the other subject areas that there will be rigorous testing and assessment done. So with that, I'll close my testimony and be happy to answer any questions from members of the committee.
Other questions? I believe there are no questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
You covered it all.
Thanks. I would like Mr. Archery to come back up. Come forward, yes, please.
I was confused, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Questions have been raised about the health standards, and my understanding may be incomplete, but I understood that the department felt that they would develop those standards for using the national standards.
That's correct.
And that would be accomplished within the department's budget.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
That helps me, and I wanted to get that on the record. Any further questions,
yes.
Senator Morissette?
Well, I guess I'm concerned about the assessment. There will be no assessment of how children throughout the state meet standards unless...
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, that would be true of a mandatory assessment of either health knowledge or physical education knowledge. I would like, however, to reiterate what Mr. Rose said. and that is that there is still state mandatory curriculum in health and physical education, as well as the arts, second languages, and social sciences. Of those four, it is true that second languages is not a required course, but health, physical education, social sciences, and are. And as a part of that, as the bill states, those high state standards form the core foundation, if you will, or framework around which the state curriculum is built. So while it is true that the assessments would not be mandatory, the core content is contained in the mandatory curriculum.
May I?
Yes.
How long have you been with the Department of Education?
Since October, Senator.
Okay. In 1999, a bill came before, and the bill was cited. I guess it was House Bill 20. No, there was another bill that was cited. It did. Oh, 3307 came before the House Committee, and I was asked by the chair to form a subgroup to work with the proponents of the physical education assessment, and their claim was that the Department of Education had a policy that they would assess, and they weren't following their own policy. And the argument was, well, if it's already a policy, why do you have to have a law requiring it? And the other argument was because they don't follow their policy. So okay. This has been a kind of a circular discussion over the years, and so we are seemingly back where we were then, and I guess it is an area of concern for me. I'm going to support the bill as it's written, and I think that we just have to face, I guess, the economic realities. But I think that I will continue to argue for more, you know, increased awareness and looking for ways to deal with the change in of our societal standards and when it comes to health and nutrition. I think that's a real, real big problem. So I appreciate your answers.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morissette, I want to echo your sentiments. First of all, let's want to make it clear that we still believe very strongly in a good, solid physical education program for all of our students, as well as a solid health program for all of our students. The issues of teenage obesity are not things that we ignore or take lightly. The issue, as you mentioned, in the 1999 bill, I do remember when the bill was passed in my other capacity prior to coming to the state agency, and the issue was the timing implementation of all of the required elements of the Certificate of Initial Mastery. If you may recall, the statute had lined up the required elements in a sequence with English, math, and science coming first, social science being currently under development, and that being followed by second languages and the arts were the ones that were slated for final implementation. One of the things that we noticed over time, and then particularly the last 2 years, is the frequency with which the state board has received waiver requests from local school districts to alter the timeline of their implementation of both the fine arts and world languages proficiencies. What that was an indication to us was, and as Representative Backlund and Hobson have talked about, a growing sense of pressure on the system to get all of this work done in the time sequence that was laid out in the statute. That in no way would represent any reduction of a sense of the importance of these core academic areas. We would hope and intend that our maintenance of high standards in these areas, so that as students wish to pursue, let us say, health or physical education, I know a number of students that would like to pursue that as an area of particular interest, having the assessments and having the high standards in place will allow them to pursue that area of interest, as in, say, the arts or world languages. The difference is that same level of participation would not be mandatory for 100% of the students in the system. but I believe strongly in maintaining the high standards and the assessments, and in not trying to in any way communicate that the health and welfare and physical development of our students is not important to us. It certainly is.
Yes.
And let the record show that I was not a health or PE teacher. I taught government, which is also not being required. I mean, that's even worse.
I consider my teaching background, for the record, Senator Morissette, is I was a social science teacher, so I share your concern.
All right. Does anyone else want to testify on this bill? If not, we're going to close the public hearing, open a work session on House Bill 2744.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Deckard, please.
House Bill 2744 to the floor with a do pass recommendation.
Senator Deckard has moved House Bill 2744 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Further discussion? Comments, Senator Deckard?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I promised a teacher in my district, Don Zering, who helped author House Bill 3307, I promised him that I would put on the record his concerns, which John Valley really did. So I am for Don, echoing the concerns that John had with the bill, someone who worked very, very hard on getting the PE part adopted in 97 and is at least a little bit chagrined that this action is taking place. And Don made some very good points.
Thank you very much. No further comments. Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. I receive necessary majority. House Bill 2744 is moved to the floor. Do pass recommendation. Senator Deckard will carry. With that, we close the work session and adjourn the Senate Education Committee. Thank you all for your